Chapter 34. Thomas's defeat of Aata an hour earlier should have been a cause for celebration, but he turned down McNab's invitation to have a drink and instead found himself wandering aimlessly along the beach, where he sat on a rock at the surf line 100 yards upshore from the village. The air was soft, and the full moon set beams of yellow light rippling across the calm water of the bay. The villagers went silent when he walked away from the grassy patch where he had humiliated their champion. Varua sat stone-faced on his chair, and Keani slipped away without him seeing. There would be no celebrating in Papara tonight. Aubert recommended that they take the skiff back to the artist's cove at first light. "You will no longer be welcome here, my friend," Aubert said. "Best to leave before you're set upon by a few young warriors, eager to avenge the honor of their people." "I simply beat him at a contest that he insisted on having," Thomas replied. "I meant nothing more." Aubert smiled and took a deep drink of wine. "Most of the things we do are never meant, Thomas, and so they find their own meaning. Our intentions be damned." "You are a philosopher now, Emile? One need not philosophize to understand that you have stepped in a very deep pile of merde, from which the safe escape is to flee." Flee once again. The solution to the problems piling up on his doorstep required that he turn tail and run. That is exactly what he had determined not to do when he faced off against Aata. And yet, despite his resounding victory in the match, it was he who must leave Papara. And Keani, had she, too, felt humiliated when Thomas threw Aata to the ground and placed his boot upon the warrior's neck? Is that why she had rushed off without so much as a sidelong glance? "I'm beyond weary of running," he thought. "And yet, this is all I seem to be able to do these past months." He slid down off the rock and walked along the sand towards McNab's hut at the outer edge of the village. Rum would not solve his predicament, of course, but in his present frame of mind, it sounded like the best medicine. As he passed a grove of thickly massed trees that formed the northeast boundary of the village, he caught the scent of tiare flower. Then he heard a rustling in the underbrush, and Keani stepped out from between two palms. She had changed into a simple white linen dress with an embroidered frontpiece. Her hair spilled in waves down off her shoulders, and she wore a fresh crown of white and red flowers. Her sea-green eyes glowed in the moonlight, and her flawless skin seemed lit more from within than from the moon high above them. Thomas froze, his hands clenched at his sides, his eyes questioning. "How did you communicate with a mute?" He knew she could hear, and that she spoke with her people with hand signs, but the emotions flooding over him as he was finally standing close by her were unlike any he had experienced. He was speechless. Keani solved his dilemma. She stepped close and took his right hand in both of hers. She lifted it, opened his closed fist, and tenderly kissed his palm before raising her head to look into his eyes. At that moment, a wind swept out of the north and gusted through the palms, lifting their fronds against the glittering, blue-black sky. Thomas felt the night air suddenly chill and saw Keani begin to shiver. He instinctively wrapped both arms around her waist and pulled her close. Her hair smelled of gardenia. Her skin was softer than the finest silk. Keani returned his embrace, lowered her head, and rested her cheek on his chest. Thomas sighed and looked up into the heavens. He could stay like this forever. A moment later, the errant wind dwindled away. A wave splashed against a rock, and a shower of orange sparks from the village bonfire drifted over their heads and out to sea. Thomas felt an unfamiliar sense of peace, and when he gently raised her chin, her eyes spoke and told him that she felt the same way. Then Keani let her head go back and parted her lips. Thomas lowered his head and brushed his lips against hers. In that instant, he lost track of time and place and, unfortunately, also his circumstances. A great roar thundered from out of the darkness, causing the startled lovers to pull away from one another. Thomas whirled to see Chief Varua rushing towards them, his wooden war club raised high above his head. Varua was upon them before Thomas could react, but the chief had come too close to hit Thomas with the head end of the 4-foot club. Instead, the shaft smashed across the bridge of his nose, breaking it with a snapping sound and sending hot blood spewing from both of Thomas's nostrils onto the sand. He fell to one knee, bright lights flashing before his eyes. He shook his head and struggled to stand, fighting the loss of consciousness he knew was near, and prepared himself for the next blow, which he feared would be better aimed than the first. He raised both arms defensively to ward off the next assault and tried to focus his blurred vision. He could only make out Varua raising the club for a second time and what looked like several men surrounding the chief and wrestling the club from his hands. Thomas made it to his feet and tried to raise his fist for whatever lay ahead. Then his vision cleared, and he saw Boswell and McNabb half-dragging Varua back towards the village. The club lay at Thomas's feet, but Keaani was nowhere to be seen. A cloud passed by the moon, and for a moment it was almost pitch black. Then the cloud slipped away, and Thomas saw that he was alone on the beach. He went back down on one knee and buried his head in his hands, mindless of the blood that continued to flow down his face and onto his chest. A form came out of the darkness and squatted down in front of him. Thomas almost didn't recognize Aubert. He had never seen the artist wear such a serious expression.
"Cette bataille est terminée, mon bon ami," said the artist in a grim tone.
"My battle is over," thought Thomas. "Keaani lost, my life uprooted once again, a new crop of enemies to add to the growing list." His friend helped him to stand and gave him a handkerchief to staunch the blood and a flask of brandy to clear his head. He took a long drink and wiped his hand across his mouth, tasting salt tears mixed with warm blood. Thomas shook his head.
"Mais ça ne fait commencer," he replied.
"But it has only just begun."